C-167. Number 6B.
Then we come to the subject of spirit. There again we can say, how can I culture, so to say, within myself the tonality of spirit when I consider spirit in those first four chapters as having a little indication of the word, Christ, Christianity, and science? I said a little indication because we have to remember that it is still the word, through all the four chapters, the word as the word, the word as the Christ, the word as Christianity, the word as science. So it isn't the full tone of the Christ in the second chapter, not the full tone of Christianity in the third chapter, not the full tone of science in the fourth chapter, but just first an indication of it, a little music, a background music that comes in. The whole tonality is still the word, and in the background you hear a little bit, yes, the word and the Christ and Christianity and science. So that you have a sense that the main tone that goes through it is still the word, the approach to the standpoint of God. All four are an approach to the standpoint of God, but each one with a little side tone and side tune in it. So, fundamentally, we go out always from prayer. So to say, always our cornerstone on which we build the whole house gives a good foundation and goes out from prayer. And what does prayer say now about spirit? Well, it says the divine being must be reflected by man. So we come to reflection and says that must be reflected by man. How can we at this point reflect God? And the very first thing that everyone can that, you see, she starts always out with those qualities in the human which are divine, which everybody has. Everybody has. Namely, that within himself he has some kind of spiritual qualities. Each one has that. That each one can see that he can reflect God by activating spiritual qualities. Spiritual qualities like gratitude, like patience, like sincerity, like obedience, like love, like meekness, like humbleness. These are qualities each one can express if he wants to. If he doesn't want to, he's out. Then he's outside the textbook, then he hasn't tried really to get acquainted with the science of being. But if he does want to get acquainted with the science of being, this is the entrance door prayer, and everybody can see that he can, so to say, entertain those qualities which are not material, which are not corporeal, but which have a spiritual touch, which have a divine touch. So we begin with spirit and say, well, I can begin by reflecting these spiritual qualities. To be grateful, for instance, to be grateful for what I have received. And that enables me to receive more. Well, to receive more of what? Not of money and not of material things, but more of the spiritual qualities. It strengthens within ourselves the spiritual qualities. And we become finally grateful for God, and not for the good received. To be grateful for life, truth, and love, as Mrs. Eddy says. And this gratitude is something that we can entertain. And I remember that early in my studies, I began to see that, and I would go on long trips or drive with a car or wherever I was, where I had time to concentrate. I was just thinking, what does it mean to be grateful that God is life? Why should I be grateful for that God is life? What would be if God would not be life? And if you think that out, what would be if God would not be life? you begin to be grateful that God is life. And if you are thinking out that if God would not be truth, that error would be true, so to say, that we had a universe of error, not a universe of truth, think out what the universe would look like, and you begin to be grateful that God is truth, and you begin to be grateful that God is love. If without love, what would happen in the world if there would just be envy, jealousy, hate, fear? What would happen in such a world where there is nothing encompassing that holds the whole world together, that everything would just blow apart? How grateful one is to that sense that God is love and all-embracing love. You really just have to ask, what would the world and our life look like if God would not be life, if God would not be truth, if God would not be love? That's a very nice little exercise you can once make when you are driving or doing something or walking around and have a nice walk in the... Actually, here in America, you can't go on nice walks, huh? Like at home, except you go into national parks, yes, then you can. But at home, you see, you can step out of the house and just be in the woods and in the fields and so on. And you go on those walks and you think to yourself, now, what would life be if God would not be life, if God would not be truth, if God would not be love? And you will soon find out that we can only be too grateful that the nature of being is life, truth, and love. So we start out with that, and here and there another quality that is necessary is that we mean it honestly, that we express some honesty in that gratitude, that also we have a sense of struggling to keep that attitude within me intact, so that I don't deviate from it, that I worship really the spiritual and no more the material. And you get the sense of the adorable one, just like in the Lord's Prayer. If we do that, then we come to the second chapter of Atonement and Eucharist, and there we had that very strict sense that shows that when you come to that second subject of spirit in the chapter of Atonement in Eucharist, that you get the sense of the Christ coming in, which always says, as with a very powerful sense, so don't do the opposite. If you have chosen in prayer to reflect spiritual qualities, then for heaven's sake, don't go the wrong way. Spirit builds up a line of demarcation and asks us that we are compelled and compels us to leave the wrong, to get away from the wrong, and to turn towards the right, to culture those qualities and not mix them up constantly. That we are therefore making a very clear decision, a clear-cut decision, that we leave the wrong and turn towards the right. That whole text is full of those renderings that says, turn away from material sense and things. Turn towards the spiritual sense of things. Turn away from matter. Turn towards the imperishable things of spirit. That recurs and recurs constantly and says, all right, you can give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, but you also have to give God what belongs to God, give your heart and everything, give your prayer attitude only towards the spiritual, and turn away from it, strive to make that decision, struggle in that decision, so that you are not drawn back constantly to the old landmarks. If we do that, we can see that something is purified within ourselves, that therefore the material sense of things have less and less a say within our consciousness, that our consciousness take hold more and more of the spiritual, and by taking hold more and more of the spiritual, we can see, they come now to marriage, to the spirit in marriage, we can see that we can actually gather together within our consciousness all the spiritual qualities, so that we express as a demonstration only spiritual qualities. It's that point where Mrs. Eddy would show that pure qualities always blend together, and that it is wrong to say that some of the spiritual qualities belong to the man and some of the spiritual qualities belong to the female, that the male and the female mind, that the masculine element and the feminine element, that they blend because they are spiritual. They therefore combine into a higher sense of civilization. They bring out within us, therefore, the pure, higher nature of man. Or actually, not the pure, a purer, because it's always in the comparative. And we bring out within us always more and more of all the qualities, the masculine and feminine qualities. So in this way, we also begin to fear, to hear, and even to experience. I have a living sense of the reflection of spirit by reflecting these qualities, all the qualities, without really any restriction, limitation. That brings us to the subject of the fourth chapter, to the first part, and that first part says, you see, if you have gone through the first three and have in prayer seen that you must reflect God through spiritual qualities, that in Atonement and Eucharist you have to separate yourself from the material qualities, and therefore seen in marriage that you can reflect all those qualities without restriction, without limitation, then you can see from the point of view of science that there is only one realm, and that realm is spirit, and the realm is spiritual, that we live and move and have our being in the spiritual, so that the communication is always purely spiritual, which gives us the sense that we don't need the opposite of spirit to communicate, that we don't need material means and channels and ways and substances in order that spirit can communicate with his own realm. It's all about that communication of spirit, that only spirit communicates itself, and that spirit communicates itself through the spiritual and not through something extraneous to spirit. Therefore, that only good, because spirit is good, that only good does communicate itself, because good alone is reality, and that communication is in the infinite realm of spirit, which does not know a separation between here and hereafter. Therefore, the good in the wholeness of being, in the whole realm of being, is constantly communicating itself to us. Therefore, the good that is in the departed can flow easily to those left behind, so that the good that has been achieved in the realm of spirit is never lost. It's still communicable, it's still transferable, it's still we are under that whole impact of spiritual good. And that gives us a great sense of the reality of spirit as the only reality of spirit. And so we come, as we always do with the science aspect, always to the rock bottom issues, namely that spirit is all, that there is nothing besides spirit, that spirit does not mingle with matter, that spirit is the only, it's all over, it reflects itself all over, it's infinite, it does not know any break between living here, death, and the hereafter. So that we really get a terrific big sense of the allness of spirit and the all-onlyness of spirit, which in the second part shows then that everything must come from that allness of spirit, that everything like strength, just taken there, one quality, something like quality like strength must come from that spirit and from the spiritual realm, because that the spirit is the only substance with which we have to handle anything, and gives a sense of that substantiality of the spiritual, that we are living in the substance of spirit, that the only substance is actually spirit, and only that which relies on spirit is actually reality and is actually operating as reality, which then in the third part brings us to the point that says, therefore, you help that spiritualization of all things by denying within you the reality of matter. And we had that third part which said, well, we have to deny the reality of matter so that in our understanding we affirm constantly the reality of spirit. And so that fourth part really gives us a sense of the reality of spirit, the infiniteness of spirit, the limitlessness of spirit, that there is only one realm, the spiritual realm. You remember in mind we had there that there is only the realm of ideas, that mind only expresses itself, maintains itself through ideas. Now in spirit it says, and that realm of ideas is the only substantial realm that exists. There is no any other realm. That's spirit. We come to soul, and here we get a very nice picture, really, of the synonymous term soul. A very practical, I would say, very much a tone of soul that is related, really, very much to the human approach to God. How does it start? It goes out, really, from prayer and says that you have to have a prayer of sinlessness. Well, that's quite a statement to state already on the third or fourth page, that we should be sinless and that we should rebuke sin, without that before has been stated what sin is. And so we must say, well, if she brings up the prayer of sinlessness, it means that sin is that if we don't go along the first and second prayer. That is missing the mark. Sin is missing the mark. So it says, stick to what you have learned or what have been presented to you in the first and second prayer. Stick to that. If you stick to that, that's sinless. And therefore refuse any other approach. And so we get here the sense that it's a prayer of that soul sense that only accepts the spiritual sense of things and not the material sense of things, that only accepts really the Christian sense of things, the Christian selfhood, that Christian selfhood which was the prayerful attitude in mind and spirit. Take only that as your starting point. Refuse any other way from sense to soul. Mind and spirit has shown you what you have to do, that if you do that, that's really sinless, and therefore stick to that. Don't give in to that. Don't speculate with God. Go in all your sincerity. You get the sense of sincerity. With all your devotion, go that way. Don't try to approach God through emotion, the opposite of soul. Through ecstasy, the opposite of soul. Through sensation, the opposite of soul. Through emotionalism, the opposite of soul. Don't do that. go that clear-cut way of spiritual understanding that has been shown in mind and spirit, and now you go that way. If you go that way, you really are sincere within you, and that sincerity finds its reward. So rebuke sin. Rebuke any other way. Rebuke any other approach. Don't try to get into heaven through the back door. Go through the open door, through the front door. Go along that way from sense to soul. And therefore, by doing that, be willing to change yourself. Be willing to be reformed. And you get the sense, really, to be humble enough and meek enough to take up that way that is shown through the first two steps of prayer, make that our own self, and make that our selfhood, so that we have only the divine selfhood in us, and therefore can rebuke any other approach. That is rebuking sin, saying, get thee behind me, Satan. Don't try to detract me from that clear way from sense to soul. Which naturally brings then in the question, which says, but from where should I get the authority and the inner power to do that? And so we need the second chapter, Atonement and Eucharist, which always shows it is the Christ that gives you the power to do the things that God asks you to do. It's always the Christ that brings forth the Christ demands. And so the second chapter shows now that it is the Christ that is working in you to go the way from sense to soul, and therefore gives you all those wonderful qualities of soul which we need. That third subject in Atonement and Eucharist, full of the tonality that we should be steadfast in on our way, that we should not give in. It's constantly saying that we should make vigorous effort to go along that way, and therefore be a stick to it, to persevere in it, to be persistent in it, constantly to go forward, constantly to reach out to the aim that we have set before us, not to waver, not to be a pendulum swinging to and fro, not to go backward, not to give in, never go back to the footsteps outgrown. The moral says, be constant, have faith, be constant, be firm in what you do. Don't become a sluggard in your race. Go on. Can you see those strong qualities of soul? The qualities of soul in prayer were much more those nice spiritual touch of spiritual sense and nurturing the spiritual sense, being willing to take the spirit and being willing to be reformed. But now in the second chapter, you get that Christ power within you, where it says it's the Christ that works within you, the will and to fulfill the good deeds. And so you feel really strengthened so much that you become constant in our endeavor. So that there is no more any wavering within ourselves. Shall I do it? Shall I not do it? Is Christian Science right? Is it not Christian Science? It may be wrong, and so on. This just doesn't come up again, because the soul, as Christ, works within us that wonderful sense of steadfastness. Then we come to a third subject in marriage, and says in marriage, yes, because you go that way from sense to soul, then something within you is always willing to lay down the mortal. You lay down the ego, your own egotistic sense. And so you give place to selflessness. You give place to mutuality, to the identity of interest, that there is only one soul at work in the universe, and that the soul, the ego, God, as soul, which is the soul of all. Therefore, you feel within yourself There is only one ego for all men, therefore all men together have a community of interests, they have mutual interest, mutual understanding, they should have a mutual care for each other, mutual support one to another, and you get that sense of identity of interest that is constantly working within us and gives us a sense of freedom because we don't have to defend constantly our personal ego. The moment we are free from a personal ego, we don't have to defend ourselves anymore. Which then brings us to the core of everything, always in the chapter on spiritualism, where she further shows that sense of, in the third subject, in the first part, that there is no possibility of a backward transformation. Because in science, she says, such a backward transformation is impossible. There, really, she says, it is impossible because you have seen that there is only one realm, the realm of mind. And there is only one realm of spirit, which is the only realm. Therefore, in that only realm, there is nothing to go back to, because it's only one realm. And only can go back to something if there are at least two or more realms. And so there is no possibility in science, she says in science, not in matter, not in unreality, in science or in belief, you can go back. But in science you can't go back because science says there is only one realm of mind, and that realm of mind is the only reality, the only spiritual reality. So there is no more a sense that we can fall back, that we can have a relapse, go back to an old condition. This is just, there is no retrograde step. All that is solved within ourselves because there is nothing to go back to. And finally, in the second part, she says, therefore we have an inner certainty of immortality. There is no going back to death. There is a certainty of immortality because God is immortal, therefore man is immortal, and I get the sense of the immortality of God being reflected in the immortality of man, which in the third part, then in spiritualism, brings up that consciousness of soul is that which controls everything. It controls the body and the world. So that we get there, that feeling, that soul is that which controls because it's superior to everything. We have gone out or come out from material sense, gone away from sense to soul, now reaching soul as the immortality of being, we feel within ourselves that therefore now we have control over any opposite suggestion. Control over the body, it controls mortals, and it controls the world. That gives the sense of soul. Yes.